Hello, welcome to the 5280 podcast. Strap on and have a good time.
From the Mobile 5280 Studios, Weekend Geek Update, Special Report. Smurf here with, oh my god, it's rare that I get to actually rub elbows with some of the hierarchy in the comic book field, but today I have award-winning and a historian of the comic book world. J. David Spurlock has torn himself away from his table.
Which I'm sharing with Jim Steranko.
Which we hope to get Jim over in a while, but Jim was a little busy, and Dave, you were busy too, though, and I appreciate you stepping away.
It's nice to be here.
Now, what's... There's so many questions that fight it out at once. What's new in the comic book world? What do you have going on right now?
Well, you know, we're the... I'm also, as well as being an author, I'm also an agent for different artists and also a publisher. We are the official publishers of Frank Frazetta, so we regularly have some new Frazetta books in the works. Right now we're trying to figure out what exactly the next Frazetta book will be. There's a couple of things we're discussing with the family.
Right. Yeah, we've had Sarah on a couple of times because she's been out and lovely, lovely female. And the family's just great.
Mm-hmm. And then also I've been working with Steranko for over 20 years, and there are a couple of books we announced a while back that Jim hasn't completed the text for. We're hoping to get back on schedule. And then I also am the head of the Wallace Wood Estate. Any business to do with Wally Wood, I'm the guy to talk to.
Wow.
So our next Wood project is basically we do a collection, at least one collection of Wood a year. The last one was a collection of romance material, which has never been reprinted. This is rare material from the early 50s. It had never been reprinted, and those original comics would cost you a fortune to buy.
Right.
And then the year before that, we had... Actually, the last one was the Jungle Collection, which includes Animan, which he premiered in Wits End magazine in the 60s, and other Jungle comics he did, including Jungle Jim and some other stuff. And some of that he did with Steve Ditko in the 60s. And then the year before that was the romance book. The year before that was Crime and Horror. It's called Wally Wood... Eerie Tales of Crime and Horror. The year before that, we did Wally Wood, Strange Worlds of Science Fiction. But the next one coming out is going to be a collection of his war comics.
Oh, wow.
And I just worked out an agreement with DC Comics where we will be able to include the war comics that Wood did for DC in our collection. So that's
that's a huge win, because they don't let that... that's cold, dead hand stuff right there.
I've got to tell you... DC respects the creators more than any other company, other than Vanguard.
Other than Vanguard, fair enough.
You know, and everybody could learn a lot about how to treat people from DC.
Well, and DC has gone through the ropes, and I like who they have in charge over at the DC camp. Mm. I mean, they're much more in tune, I think, with the fans than the other publishers that we won't name, but
yeah.
I mean, I enjoy DC a lot more than I have Marvel for years.
Well, for decades, a lot of people have said, well, even the talent, the talent would say DC is a far better company to work for, but we just think that Marvel's got more cool characters. You know, it's like, okay, well, you can't beat Batman. It doesn't come better than Batman.
It doesn't.
But Marvel's got a lot of characters on that same level with Batman.
Of course.
So now DC, now with the fabulous Wonder Woman revival.
Yes.
You know, that's
a huge win.
We've been looking forward to that.
A win without Batman. That was holy shit.
And to tell you the truth, that Batman versus Superman, Wonder Woman was the best part of it.
Yes.
You know, that last third of the film or last 25% of the film that she pops into was just like, well, yeah, this is what we want.
Yeah, and that was the whole... I bought the movie just for that. I don't even care about the rest of the... Nothing. Oh, your mom is Martha, too? Oh!
Nothing against Batman and Superman. And actually, this past year in San Diego, the Vanguard booth in San Diego, we're going into our 25th year, mm-hmm. our 25th anniversary publishing, and our 25th year in San Diego. And we are on the floor just across from DC. And they had like the whole Justice League up there, including Wonder Woman and Batman, Aquaman. They were all up there. That was one of the big events of the year, this 2017 in San Diego, which was right by our booth. And it was packed. That whole area was
just mobbed.
Yeah, shoulder to shoulder.
So do you think there's a really underused character that DC or Marvel are missing? Because with the revitalization in the films and the stories, is there a character out there that they're overlooking, in your opinion?
There are some issues. There were some deals made years ago before Marvel started doing their own films, and they're trying to get some of that cleared up. Like if X-Men rights all revert or Spider-Man rights
Fox
all revert.
And
you know, things like that. But there was some issue with Submariner. I forget exactly what the details were, but there's some legal reason they haven't done anything with the Submariner. I think that's one of the major long-term characters that they haven't done anything with. We were happy. Stranko and I spent a little time with the actress that plays Madame Hydra on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, she's here, and I'm hoping to talk to her, because her as Ada was, I mean, to watch her character evolve from the LMD to consciousness is an amazing feat.
Yeah. And then last week, Stranko and I were at Edmonton, Alberta, in Canada. And we were spending time with Charlotte Cox, who plays Daredevil.
Yes.
And so we had an evening out. It was really nice with him. And I gifted him a Wally Wood shirt, and he was so gracious. It seemed like it meant the world to him. And when we mentioned Steranko to Madame Hydra, she's like, "Oh, I know his work. I want to meet him. You know, I've got the very first issue that he did. You know, with Madame Hydra." So that's it. That. You know, to me, it's like I said last night before dinner. You have someone who creates a property, and the companies most of the time end up holding the rights and profiting off of them for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50
years. Decades.
And then you have an actor or actress, you know, as good as they are, and we all love the actors and actresses who are playing these roles, that come in and they can, you know, come to great acclaim very quickly just playing the role, you know. But I'm always out here beating the drum for the creators and saying, look, and we're losing them.
Yes.
You know, we just lost Basil Gogos, who I worked with for many, many years, the great monster artist, did all the great famous Monsters of Filmland covers.
Yep.
And, you know, I've worked with many, John Buscema, John Romita. Well, Romita's still alive, but he's not doing conventions anymore.
Well, because I've talked to his son, because he was at Denver Comic Con last year. Brilliant man. Yep. I mean, and his love, I mean, Daredevil 8 is his favorite one, because he remembers being under his dad's desk when he's doing the art for that. He's like, that's the one.
His father did not do Daredevil number 8. Wally Wood did Daredevil number 8.
So what? Because that's the one that he mentioned that's his favorite
he must
one.
Have, well, that's the wrong number. You know, the first Romita issue of Daredevil was number 12.
Maybe that's it.
Number 12. That's the very first Romita. Wood took over. The year that Daredevil launched was 1964. And Wood took over later that year, just after issue number 4.
Mm-hmm.
Daredevil had the yellow costume. Wood did not like that costume from the beginning.
No, it's a horrible costume.
You know, some people are nostalgic about it. It does evoke an earlier era.
It's true.
And so it's almost like a private club. We are the yellow people. We are the yellow fans. We like the yellow costume. And, you know, I understand that and I relate to it. But most people who were around in those days basically are in agreement that Daredevil would have been canceled by issue 6. Had it continued without Wood coming in making all the changes he made. And Marvel gave, they were so proud to have him. You have to realize Wood was coming off of a 12-year run on Mad Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Mad Magazine was selling between 1 and 2 million copies a month when the top-selling Marvel book was selling 300,000.
Jesus.
Okay? That was at
That's
least
huge. It,
Mad sold 5 to 10 times what the best-selling Marvel comic, and he was the top star at Mad. All right, he was the only artist in every single issue of Mad for the first 12 years. The only one.
Wow.
Kurtzman left. Mm-hmm. Davis left. Elder left. Wood was the only one in every single issue, and he was the star artist. When Harvey Kurtzman, the original editor, founding editor of Mad, left, which he joined with Hugh Hefner to launch Trump magazine, and that failed fairly quickly.
Yep, I remember that.
But he and Trump were very close, and so he developed Little Annie Fanny for Playboy magazine, and he stayed there for some years after that. But Wood stayed and really saved the company. Joe Orlando was very close with me. He was very close. Joe Orlando ended up becoming associate publisher of Mad and vice president of DC. Well, Joe and I were very close. I consider him a mentor. And he was partners, actually, with Wood for a while in the 50s. And one of his best friends. He was also very close with Bill Gaines, the publisher of Mad and EC. Mm-hmm. And Gaines told Orlando, if Wood leaves with Harvey and the rest of the guys, I'm going to shut the magazine down. It's over. You know, and he says, you're really close with him. I want you to work on him, try to get him to stay. Because if he's our star... They said the readers don't even hardly know who Kurtzman is. It's Wood that they're coming for.
That's who they're for.
If we can keep him, I think we can make it without Harvey. Wood stayed, and they got bigger after Harvey left. And then they rehired Feldstein to come in as editor, and Mann got even bigger after that. They went from selling 1 million copies to selling 2 million copies.
Wow.
So that was good. So Wood came off of that, but Wood started having... In about 1959, he started having these terrible migraine headaches. And the doctors did not have all the options we have today. They didn't have anxiety medicine
right.
in 1959. They didn't have, you know, stress things. They didn't have things like we have depression, treatment for depression. They didn't have any of that stuff. You know, you want a treatment for depression, go buy a bottle of whiskey. You know, that's good luck.
Get over yourself. Just go do something.
Good luck to you. So there was 1 year in there where there was not a single day that Wood did not have a debilitating migraine headache.
Wow.
And the doctors couldn't say what was the root of it. They couldn't fix it. But he had a sneaking suspicion it had something to do with Mad. And he left Mad... in 64 to return. He had become bigger than comic books. He was not doing... Mad was a magazine. It was not considered a comic book at that point. He did the newspaper strip, which was considered much better than comic books, with Jack Kirby Skymasters, mm-hmm. which is an outer space strip. He did that in about 59. He did illustrations for Galaxy Magazine. Galaxy Magazine was a very top-selling science fiction magazine. He did work for them for many years. He started doing some work for Topps. He helped to create Mars Attacks for Topps.
That's right. I forgot about that.
And then if you go to the film credit site, IMDb, and you look up Wally or Wallace Wood, it will list him. One of his credits is Mars Attacks.
I always forget about Mars Attacks in his repertoire because it's so classic and so it's so him that I always forget about it because it's... It's brilliant.
Some people thought that the movie was a little too cheeky. But the thing is, that's one thing that's interesting about Wood. You got a lot of artists. I've got a quote on film. I want to do a documentary on Wood. And I've been shooting little clips of famous people talking about Wood.
Right.
And I got a clip with Neil Adams. And he says, there are Bigfoot artists and Littlefoot artists. A Bigfoot artist does humor work, and the Littlefoot artists do realistic or superhero or adventure work. He says Wally Wood was the best of both worlds. He could be a Bigfoot artist and Mad. He can do the best science fiction or superhero work as good as anybody. You know, he was both a Bigfoot. And it's almost non-existent to see someone like Wood who was equally versed in both of those worlds. But the Mars Attacks... kind of fits right on that edge. I want to compare it to the movie Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh.
I thought Man from U.N.C.L.E. did an excellent job. A lot of people have tried it, but it's very difficult to pull off having a film or a comic that is humorous but also dramatic, balance. In the real world, we have humor and we have drama and we have sorrow and we have tragedy. And that's the depth. That adds depth. And but when they package a film, they want one genre or another.
Yeah, they don't. You know. They don't want to cross the streams.
Yeah, it's and it's hard to pull it off if you try to. But they pulled it off. I thought they did a really good job on the Man from U.N.C.L.E. film. Well,
the tension between Cavill and I always forget the other actor, but I mean they were both brilliant in how they approached the characters, and you don't see the double cross coming till the end,
right?
And you're like, oh, well, yeah, okay, that makes total sense. But the tension and the the whole interrogation scene is classic, and it's got the right mix of humor and
right.
and brutality.
And that's one of the things that made originally made Fantastic Four such a hit at Marvel was that Stan really likes humor. Mm-hmm. He likes humor and he likes romance. Kirby is the cosmic guy.
Yes.
Kirby's the superhero guy. If you look at what Stan was doing before Kirby came back to Marvel, you know, he was writing humor, he was writing romance, he was writing westerns. Mm-hmm. He was not big into science fiction. He wasn't doing superheroes. He wasn't doing anything cosmic. That's Jack Kirby's specialties.
Yeah.
So if you combine that, there was a lot of repartee, back and forth zingers between the Thing and the Human Torch. Then you've got kind of like a love triangle between Sue and the Submariner and Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic. You know, so they got it all in there and it really works. You get a similar thing going on in the Wallywood Daredevil, in the early Daredevil, where you have the office, you know, romance circle. And so anyway, that's... There's some good stuff for you.
There's some good stuff.
But that's one thing about Mars Attacks and Wood, where it is a little bit on both sides. It is over the top. And you can have that in your comics and your bubblegum cards.
And how are you going to get Tom Jones in a sci-fi?
Singing to the birds.
I mean, come on.
Life goes
classic.
On. Life goes on. Thank God.
And Jack Nicholson, come on.
You know, when that movie came out... Independence Day came out, both had the same theme.
Oh, yeah.
Invasion from outer space. And Independence Day came out just like a couple weeks after Mars Attacks, and it stole Mars Attacks' thunder.
It did.
The exact same thing happened to my good friend, the late Dave Stevens, film The Rocketeer.
Mm-hmm.
Rocketeer should have been a much bigger film initially, but like the following week, Terminator, I think it was Terminator 2 came
yep.
out, and it stole its thunder. But Mars Attacks reruns on television frequently, and so does Rocketeer. In the long run, those movies have more than made up for the thunder that got stolen from them out of the box office initially.
Because they're great. I mean, the Lawn Gang with those is way better. Independence Day, I mean, they got their just desserts. That sequel, oh, just... So now is your passion for, because with the horror side, I mean, this is the one side that I feel that has fallen through the cracks in comics. I mean, with the EC and stuff, back in the day, that's what got me hooked. I mean, Green Lantern's first DC hero, Spidey's the first, but it's always the EC books with the horror and the Creep Keeper and all of that. Is horror coming
What'd
back?
What did you say about Green Lantern?
Green Lantern's my first DC character.
Oh, your first.
Yes.
Okay.
That's all right. That was... He's a complete run. Love Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
And that introduced me to the hero genre. But it was EC that pulled me into comics to begin with. The horror stuff and all of that. I mean,
Well, you're too young for EC. You must have been reading the reprints.
Yes.
Was that the Russ Cochran reprints?
I think so.
Yeah. Those were the first. Those came out in the 70s.
Yeah. Because I grew up in Wisconsin. So, you know, middle of nowhere, dime store.
Mm-hmm.
Readers, that was my introduction to comics.
Yeah, well, I started in the mid '60s, right about the time that Wood left Mad and went to Daredevil. Actually, a hair after that, he had left Mad. He was on Daredevil and he was leaving Daredevil to create Thunder Agents.
Mm-hmm.
But at that exact same time, in 1965. They were reprinting his Mad in paperbacks.
Oh, did not know that.
And another indication of, even though after he had left, of how highly they regarded him, most of those Mad paperback reprints in the 60s, the lead story is the Wally Wood.
Wow.
Now, I want to say this, because I just called him Wally, all right? You will hear from people who worked with Wood, he hated being called Wally. Okay? I feel like I have to address this. I got a couple minutes?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it is your podium, sir.
Okay. All right, so the truth of the matter is, yes. Yes. If you look, if he would sign his work, if he had his choice, he would always sign Wallace.
Wally.
Wallace.
Oh, Wallace, okay.
Yeah, he preferred Wallace. If you met him, he would say, call me Woody. Yeah, from the point that he was in the military, he went in toward the end of World War II. He had one tour of duty in the Merchant Marine. Mostly what they were doing, they were acting as supply ships in the Pacific. Mm-hmm. And then so they would carry the supplies to the troops, but they also had a lot of duty picking up prisoners of war.
Oh, so he was island hopping.
If they would sink, if the Americans would sink a Japanese boat or plane and there were survivors, it was frequently the Merchant Marine whose job it was to pick up those survivors and then take them wherever they were going to be, you know, interred.
Detained, right.
And so, but then the next year, he signed up as a paratrooper. And he was a paratrooper right at the end of the war and was stationed in one of the islands of the Pacific. Right when we were taking over, occupying Japan and those islands, they were going in and taking each island one at a time.
Right.
And I forget the name of the island he was on, but it's in my award-winning biography of Wood, Wally's World, which is out of print right now, but we hope to do a new edition soon.
Nice.
I forgot how I got onto his war thing.
Because you were clarifying
so
why you can call him Wally.
Oh, that's it. Good. Thank you so much. I need all the help I can get. So, yeah. But the fact is, he was raised as Wally. His family called him Wally. Okay? And his friends in the 50s called him Wally. Frank Frazetta called him Wally. Yeah. Al Williamson called him Wally. Joe Orlando called him Wally. His wife never called him Wally. She always called him, his first wife, mm-hmm. called him Wallace. Hmm. Okay? And so he would sign his work, Wallace, or just Wood. On rare occasion, he did sign a few early things as Woody. But if you were introduced to him, he'd say, call me Woody. Gradually, as you get into the 60s, he started not liking being called Wally.
Hmm.
And I think it was a little bit of it's not unusual someone is raised in kind of like a nickname based on their name. Like nobody calls me Davey. Okay? If somebody called me Davey, I'm like,
what the hell's wrong with you?
You want to go outside? You know, you got something to say to me? You know what I'm saying? So, it's funny because Steranko,
mm-hmm.
The only guy I know of that got away with calling Steranko Jimmy was Carmine Infantino.
Okay.
And I worked with Carmine for close to 20 years, and he passed away a few years ago. Co-creator of The Flash, Batgirl, mm-hmm. Poison Ivy, all kinds of characters.
Staples. Yeah. Staples in the villain years.
Yeah. Batgirl, did I mention her?
Yes.
So, Carmine and I worked together a lot, so we ended up doing shows where I'd have Carmine and Steranko both with me. So by the end of the show, Jim's still like chatting with some fans, and Carmine's like, Jimmy, come on, it's time for dinner. I'm coming, Carmine, I'm coming.
Well, I tell everyone, I've talked to Steranko in the past, but I've never had him on the show. He's like the Sinatra of comics. The man is royalty. I mean, just listening to him talk, you just like, I could never imagine anyone calling him Jimmy. It's like,
exactly.
It's like, holy crap.
So it's common for people not, you know, those are kind of names you'd have as a kid, and you kind of grow out of it, and somebody at some point would say, okay, don't call me Bill anymore, call me Bill, or
right.
call me William, whatever. So whether it was just that, or possibly, you know, Wood was a little on the short side. He wasn't extremely short. He was just a little on the short side. But it may have been something, you know, where like maybe he was teased in elementary school or something. Somebody may have called him Little Wally Wood or something. He may have harkened back to that. But it definitely, as we get into the mid-60s, he definitely would prefer not to be called Wally. But the interesting thing is, he recognized there is a magic in the name Wally Wood.
Mm-hmm.
It rolls off the tongue. One of his idols was Walt Kelly, Pogum?
Mm-hmm.
Pogum strip.
Pogum.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pogo. Pogo.
Yes.
I mixed it up with Pogum. Wood did a takeoff on it, and Mad, he called Pogum. Yeah, Pogo strip.
Yeah.
Well, that was one of Wood's favorite artists was Hal Foster, who did Tarzan and Prince Valium. And then he was also big into Milt Kniff, Alex Raymond, Eisner, and Walt Kelly, and Walt Disney, too. And so Walt Kelly, in fact, when Wood won an award from the National Cartooning Society, it was Walt Kelly that presented it to him, and that meant even more him than winning the award, the fact that one of his idols had presented him. But even Walt Kelly did a strip where Wally Wood was the punchline of the strip. They're sitting around and they're talking about words and words that rhyme or look alike or different things. And the punchline of the strip was, have you ever heard of Wally Wood? You know, there's two W's, two L's, you know, two O's. You know, it's like it's a magical name. Even the size of the words almost match.
Mm-hmm.
There's a balance to it. It's a fabulous name, and he recognized that. Even though he didn't enjoy being called Wally, he recognized that. And occasionally, he would choose when he chose to sign an autograph, Wally Wood, and sometimes even he would put a copyright notice as Wally Wood. If you look at Heroes Inc. featuring Cannon, the first issue in 1969, on the cover it says copyright Wally Wood. So when he felt it was good for marketing, he would use it. And it is now a registered trademark of the Wood Estate. So, you know, like DC, Mad wanted to do a collection of all the Wally Wood, the early Mad that was in full color comics before
right.
it turned into a black and white magazine. They recently did a collection of that. And
yeah, DC just did that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they wanted to put his name in the title. They didn't want to say Mad Comics by Wallace Wood. And they contacted the Wood Estate, and we worked it out. And I did make the point to them. I'm like, you look, pull up those. Not a single Mad ever had a credit to anybody named Wally Wood. It was always Wallace. Every single issue for all those years he was at Mad, it was always Wallace.
Right.
But because it is valuable for marketing, they did want to use the registered trademark Wally Wood in that title, and we made an agreement.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think he goes, I don't think he goes unnoticed, but I think he goes unappreciated. I mean, because he's like one of the founding fathers. I
mean, anyone that knows the history knows he's a Hall of Famer.
He is.
He's an absolute Hall of Famer. And you can hardly have much of a discussion with Steranko without Wood coming into it. Wood was as big an influence, if not bigger, on Steranko as Jack Kirby was.
Right.
People think of Steranko as being like the next generation Jack Kirby. And there is that connection. But absolutely, he's also following in the tradition of Wood, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he did one Nick Fury cover that was a tribute to Wood, the one in outer space.
Yes, where he's got the helmet on and yeah, he's doing the, yeah. again, classic pose.
And I can show you a Wood figure from Weird Fantasy or Weird Science. It's from the story...
I think it's the Weird Science.
Home to Stay. Mm-hmm. And that last where he's drifting out in space, mm-hmm. it's the closest thing to that. And Steranko told me, if you get him on here, you can cut my version of the story and get him to tell it. But he'll tell the story where he asked Wood. He did that as a
tribute.
If
he can do the tribute?
He wanted Wood to ink it. And at that time, Wood was not working for Marvel. He was working at Tower. And nobody at Marvel, when Wood left, it was not on the best of terms. He quit.
Sounds normal for Marvel.
he quit because he was not getting paid for all the writing work he was doing. And one issue they gave him writing credit on, that's the only issue they paid him for the writing, but he plotted all of his Daredevil. I have direct quotes from Wood saying, confirming that he plotted all of his issues, but there were other places where Marvel confirmed it, but not in the credit box. They confirmed it on multiple letters pages, and they confirmed it in the official Mary Marvel Marching Society fan club mm-hmm. newsletter. They also confirmed it there that he was plotting. So, but in the credit box, it just said Stan Lee, who was doing like the final dialogue. So he kept saying, look, I've got to be I'm doing a lot of work. I've got to be paid for this work. And Stan said, well, you need if you'd have to write every word to get the writing pay. He says, fine, I'll write every word. And he did on Daredevil 10. And then right after that, he got the offer to basically run this whole superhero line for the another publisher, Tower.
Right.
And he went over there. So no one at Marvel would have thought to call Wood, because when he left, he did not leave on the best of terms. But Steranko wanted to do an homage to Wood, wanted Wood to ink it, and he asked Wood. Well, here's the funny part, is Wood was famous for doing very, very detailed work at EC, and that had inspired Steranko. And so when he showed the pencils to Wood and asked him to ink it, he says, oh, no, I could never ink that. He's like, why not? He says, you put too much detail in your work. And Steranko says, I put too much detail. Where do you think I got it from?
Oh, my God. I mean, because you have him, you have Wrightson, you have Fizetta. I mean, the detail and just the meticulous line work. Yeah. I mean, they were... that's why I refer to them as the Founding Fathers, because they're the...
But the final icing on that cake was, after the book came out and Wood saw the published cover that Steranko inked it himself, he says, you know, I should have inked that.
And here's the rub. You're right, I should have inked that. Excellent, Dave. So I don't want to keep you too much longer. For the listeners at home, what's the best way to follow you? I mean, you're still working, right?
Oh, we're cranking stuff out, and we're on the road. We're doing quite a fall tour here. We did Edmonton, Alberta, Canada last week. We're in Denver this week. We're at New York Comic Con next week. 2 weeks after that, we're in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So everywhere I go, you know, these all four shows I just named are with Steranko, but also wherever I go, I'm also representing the Wood Estate,
right,
as well as Vanguard Publishing and my own writing. So yeah, there's always a lot going on. Like I said, Vanguard's going into 25th anniversary year for 2018. We're going to be celebrating that. Also 25 years in San Diego next summer. We're planning on doing a 25th anniversary book that will focus on a lot of the artists that we've worked with over the years. Mm-hmm. Neil Adams, Frazetta, Steranko, Wood, just the cream of the crop, the best people in the history of comics, and focusing on our history of working and promoting those artists. So we hope to premiere that in San Diego next year.
On the anniversary? Excellent.
But the best places to find me, the website is vanguardpublishing.com. And I'm all over Facebook. Steranko's on Twitter, but I'm all about the Facebook. Now, there is a Wallace Wood Estate Twitter account, but I do a lot more on Facebook. There's on Facebook, on the website is vanguardpublishing.com, but on Facebook it's Vanguard Productions. And there's a couple of different Vanguard Productions, the one with the big red V. And not only do we talk about the books we're publishing and the artists and talents we work with, but we also entertain people. I post a lot of rock and roll videos. We're also we're into all kind of culture and things on there. Also, I run both of the Steranko Facebook groups. One's called Steranko. Mm-hmm. The other one's called Jim Steranko Fan Club. I also run the group, the Wally Woods Daredevil Facebook group. There's also a page on Facebook, the Wallace Wood Estate. There's another one that's called Wallace Wallywood. So all of those I run. I also manage I also work with Frank Brunner. I manage the Frank Brunner and Friends Facebook group.
All right.
So, you know, I'm easy to find.
You are all over the place. Dave.
I'm easy. You know, if I took what I've written for Facebook... I need to put it into a book. I'm like, you know, I get paid for writing.
You should do your memoirs.
I'm like, I'm not getting paid to write all this stuff. But you know what? I do it for Steranko. I do it for Brunner. I do it for Wood. You know, I'm dedicated to these guys and teaching new generations. I love seeing when we're at shows now, we're getting a lot of younger people, and they've really turned on to the classic talents a lot through Facebook and online and different sources.
With online coming the way it is, I mean, it's open doors. I mean, the hipsters have no idea who these guys are. They see this breathtaking artwork that's making a comeback, a resurgence,
right,
and they want to know. And they are a talent. They are a gem.
Yeah.
Dave, thank you so much for sitting in. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I'll bounce over there. Please follow him on Facebook. It's in the end. We're all stories, so make it a good one.